A dark infinity filled with unknown dangers. No light, no sound. You may think of space, but I am referring to the deep sea. In many ways, the ocean and the universe do not differ so much from each other. Both places have no oxygen, are pitch dark, and most of its territory has never been explored by humans. Of course, sailors have sailed around the globe in search of new land, food, adventure, and even just for pleasure. But most of them only saw the surface of the ocean. Of course, there are divers, but they never go much deeper than the sunlight. The dive record is currently at 330 feet. An Egyptian man dived to that insane depth in the Red Sea, but no matter how deep that may sound, it's a fraction of how deep the sea actually is. The deepest point of all lies in the Pacific Ocean and is approximately 6.8 miles deep, almost 7 miles of uncharted darkness. It is understandable that there is a name for a deep-rooted fear of the deep sea. It's called thalassophobia. Who knows what creature might lurk underneath you when you are swimming or sailing far away from the coast? As a fisherman, I have tried to never see the sea as something that's hostile towards humans. Of course, every now and then the waves make your life hard. Mostly, though, I regard the sea as a friend. I make my living out of it, and it's beautiful how quickly your organ of balance adjusts to the waves. After a few years of working on a boat, there comes a point when sleeping without the sound of the sea becomes more difficult than with. Still, working as a fisherman is a tough existence. It requires a certain self-willedness to spend the majority of your days in the midst of the salty sea air. The stench of the catch and the physically demanding work scare away even the toughest men. It wasn't my main career choice either, but the hard work earned pretty well, and at least everyone on board was equal. It didn't matter much whether you were black or white, if you came from the city or was born in a small town, as long as you didn't mind working around 15 to 18 hours a day. The reason I ended up on the Virgin Mary, however, was not because I was craving for a certain form of brotherhood, but because I saw the sea as a safe place. After a stupid decision in my youth, I had been on the run for almost 4 years, always trying to move a few steps ahead of its possible disastrous consequences. Maybe my enemies had forgotten me by now. Maybe they'd let go of their resentment, or taken it out on someone in my immediate area. I had no idea, but I was still paranoid, and after years of living in fear, I accidentally came up with the idea of becoming a sailor. The sea had seemed like a logical place for me to remain anonymous. Nobody could get to me on a sailing ship, miles from the coast, far away from my homeland. And it turned out to be true. The ship had indeed given me shelter. During my work, I could breathe. And slowly I began to forget my past. Our crew hunted for different types of fish off the Florida coast, but on that particular trip our catch consisted mainly of tuna, a fast swimmer, but easy to catch because they move around in big schools. On the day that marked the end of my career as a fisherman, a nut job called Frank Perry screamed in terror and almost slipped on the wet deck when he saw what we'd dragged on deck. Between the regular catch of tuna fish lay a shiny black colossus that initially looked like the decaying corpse of a mammal. It is not unusual for us to bring in unwanted catch. One time we threw two frightened belugas back into the water after they somehow got caught in the net. Octopuses, small sharks and turtles regularly get caught up in our nets as well. It sounds harsh, but with hundreds of pounds of catch per day, we only take the trouble to throw these unfortunate victims back into the sea in exceptional cases. But what we saw in the net that morning exceeded the imagination of every man on board. In the midst of the silver fish lay a black and shiny mass in which I was only able to recognize a fish-like shape after a few minutes. In the pale morning light, I could see its cartilage through the shiny dark flesh. Its bones were angular and sharp, similar to the thin bones you see in the wing of a bat. The skeleton was partially visible and made of the same white material as its spiny fins, which were surprisingly short for such a huge fish. The entire crew stared at the hideous creature in awe, completely taken aback by the fish that seemed to have been taken straight from a nightmare. It was Fernando who broke the silence. "Wow," he said, and with a pole he pulled the dead thing out of the net, and to my horror the carcass turned out to be even larger than I had initially expected. Under the remaining catch a giant tail emerged. The head of the animal reminded me of that of a monkfish, a deep sea fish that attracts fishes lost in the darkness with its lamp-like lure and then swallows them up. Besides its shape and considerable size, the similarities with deep sea fish were striking. This fish also had a huge mouth, from which protruded long teeth, somewhat similar to that of a poisonous snake. There was no doubt that this was a predator. Its eyes were small but strikingly white, and with no visible pupil. I felt uncomfortable looking at it for too long. There was no doubt that the animal was dead, and I was really happy about that. The thought that this thing had once roamed the depths below us gave me the creeps. Only when Fernando had taken the carcass completely out of the net, and it lay in full display on the deck, its terrible scent came loose. An air that smelled strongly of salt and decaying meat. A few of the men held their noses with their fingers, something that only rarely happened given the normality of the stench on the ship. It's something that you get used to, but this was different. We were still staring at the monstrous creature when we heard the sound of the creaking hinges of the door of the captain's cabin. The captain rushed towards us with a grumpy look on his face. Apparently he had seen us standing around doing nothing, and he immediately called us to order. One of the reasons the captain made it to his rank was that he had absolutely no patience, a virtue on the deck, but even he stopped shouting when he saw the carcass lying on the deck. But unlike his crew, he didn't take the time to stare extensively at it.
"Throw that hideous thing back into the sea, Fernando. It makes me sick. And then continue processing. You're not paid for doing nothing."
Fernando nodded, but I could see the resistance in his eyes. Perhaps because he simply thought it was a dirty job, but most likely because he knew that this catch was something special. Even I, a relatively inexperienced fisherman, could sense that it was a unique catch. I had never seen anything like it, and in my 3 years as a skipper on various seas, I thought I had seen my range of strange sea creatures. But this had to be a species of fish that had been dragged from the deepest depths of the Gulf of Mexico, and had, for some reason, ended up in our net. New Steve jumped in.
"Wait, Captain, perhaps we can have it examined by a marine biologist. A man like that would certainly be interested to take a closer look, don't you think?"
said the young man who'd just joined the crew of the Virgin Mary. New Steve was his nickname because he had replaced the old Steve immediately after the old crook had fatally hit his head against a pulley in the port of Miami. New Steve might have worn the same name, but he had significantly more brains than his predecessor.
"And what if that biologist has examined such fish 1,000 times before?"
the captain murmured cynically.
"Is that what you're really worried about? At least we'll know what we've caught,"
Steve said daringly. Two crew members nodded in unison.
"At least we'll know what kind of a creature it is. I've never seen a goddamn monster like that before. I don't think anyone here has, sir."
The captain stared at his feet for a moment and then smiled.
"Maybe a marine biologist is even willing to pay for it,"
he said, like he came up with the idea himself.
"He might, Captain," the mate said. "It's worth a shot." "We split everything the fool gives us for it with the crew. After we get back to shore, we will drink a toast to this god-awful creature,"
the captain said. There was a hesitant cheer, because most of us knew that the prospect of extra money for a bycatch like this would probably not go beyond the usual few hundred that we earned by selling the regular bycatch to local restaurants in Miami. But the idea nevertheless put the crew in good spirits.
"Very well," the captain said. "Fernando, put it in one of the freezers, but make sure that no other fish is anywhere close to it. I don't want that awful smell to ruin the batch."
Fernando smiled, but the grin disappeared from his face when he looked at the black animal.
"Can I help?"
I asked the captain, who shrugged somewhat indifferently and walked back to his cabin. I am curious by nature, and the chance to take care of such a unique creature, if only for a moment, was something I wouldn't just pass up. While the rest of the crew started processing the tuna, Fernando and I took care of the cadaver. We briefly discussed how we would transport it, because it was so big. In the end, we decided to just carry it. Fernando grabbed the tail and I lifted the animal by its torso. The smell was unbearable, and for a moment I regretted volunteering for the job. Fernando and I placed the dead fish in an empty icebox, and we did so in an almost respectful manner, as if we were dealing with a mythical or noble being that had to be treated with respect. Before we closed the icebox, we looked at it one last time. As the strong wind hit the windows, Fernando commented on its teeth. He wondered what a predator should do with such huge incisive teeth.
"Maybe it hunts for prey larger than itself," I said.
At that time, the first mobile phones were already out there, but still without data roaming, and even if it had been there, we probably wouldn't have had any reception, so far at sea. Nowadays, we could have looked for it on the internet, but at the time, we had to be patient and rely on the expertise of a biologist on land, about 60 miles from our ship. During our late lunch, we spoke enthusiastically about the find, despite our tiredness. I told them the fish reminded me of a monkfish, a fish that lives exclusively at incredible depths. A crew member agreed with me. He had seen a documentary about the deep sea on National Geographic and found that the characteristics indeed resembled a monkfish.
"But the back body looks more like that of an eel or a giant shark," he said while plucking his beard.
I was glad that after our meal we continued with our work and we didn't have to talk about the fish any more. The conversation had given me an ominous feeling for some reason, as if talking about the dead creature that was lying in the freezer was a form of sacrilege. I tried to focus on my work, but my thoughts kept getting back to the fish. It was one of those rare grey days in Florida, and I wasn't surprised when I saw that a storm was developing in the evening. The water splashed on the deck, and a drizzle made the work even more uncomfortable than it already was. The crew was happy that we would return to the mainland the next day. As always, the final days of processing were the worst, but at least there was the prospect of a few days off. That night, I dreamed that I was swimming underwater, and only when I looked up I saw a shimmer of light. There was no noise and no smell, only a black shadow in the distance, getting closer and closer. Only when the shadow was about 10 meters away from me did I realize that it was the black fish coming back to haunt me. Alive and well this time. His giant teeth were the first thing I recognised. The animal was no longer made of limp, dead meat. This time, it was a streamlined, almost elegant machine that glided through the water like a hot knife through butter. Strangely enough, the beast did not frighten me. However, its presence made me feel uneasy. Only now did I associate it with an eel. It was the way the animal moved through the water, like a snake. It was meters long and swam calmly but quite fast in my direction. While it came closer, I knew the snake-like fish had no intention of harming me, so I did nothing but watch it. The way its body zigzagged through the water was almost hypnotic. After a while, I realized that it was observing me. I wondered for what purpose. And suddenly the monster spoke to me, not the fish itself, but I heard it through my own voice, which I heard inside my own head. But it wasn't me, it was the fish. "I am dark and deep, and closer than you think. I'm dark and deep and closer than you think. Closer than you think. Dark, deep and closer than you think, it said. Then I awoke abruptly, bathing in sweat. It took a while before I knew where I was. I was no longer underwater, but inside the Virgin Mary's cabin. Fernando looked at me from his bunk bed with sparkling eyes. I heard the rain ticking loudly against the small round window of our cabin. Our nights were short when we were on the water, 4 to 5 hours at best, way too short for nightmares. Fernando was still staring at me.
Is everything okay?
He asked.
I had a nightmare, I explained.
About what?
Doesn't matter, I said softly.
I didn't want to acknowledge that the catch had given me a nightmare. Fernando would think I was scared and might even use that against me. You have to be careful on a ship. Showing weakness is a liability in the masculine climate on board and often results in bullying.
Go to sleep, said Fernando. We only have 2 hours left before work starts again.
I looked at my digital clock and saw that he was right. It was 2:30, but I was wide awake. The black monster haunted me. I tried to pay attention to the sound of the strong wind and the ticking rain, but the image of that dead fish kept popping up. The idea that the carcass was less than a few yards away from our cabin made me feel uneasy. It was as if the fish was not a dead organism, but a manifestation of something dark that did not belong on this ship, that deserved no place in the world that belonged to humans. 10 minutes, I heard Fernando's breath getting heavier, and I knew that meant he was asleep again. I kept thinking about the nightmare. I remembered the words the fish had spoken inside my head vividly. I looked out of the window and stared at the pitch-dark sky and the dark waves that reflected the light that came from the boat. I thought of everything that stirred beneath the surface. I had never thought about it, but suddenly it was a scary thought. Not nearly as creepy, however, as the thought of the dead monster that was currently on the ship and would stay there until we docked. I decided that the only way to dissolve the thought of that horrible creature was to remove it from the ship. It was not a rational thought, but I'd never been a rational person. My irrationality was the reason I ended up on the Virgin Mary in the first place. I told myself that nobody would really miss it, and my night's sleep was more important than some biological research. I knew I might get in trouble for removing it, but my fear was stronger than that. It was almost an instinct. It needed to be gone. So I stood up and carefully dressed, trying not to wake Fernando again. Outside, the storm was playing havoc upon the deck. The waves crashed loudly against the deck, and the wind was so strong, I lost my balance twice when I walked over to the cooling room. When the night watch was not present at his usual post, I realized that even he had left his post because of the storm. The wind slammed the rain against my cheeks, but I was determined. The sky was black and ominous. Normally there was moonlight and stars in the sky, but this night there was only the cool light from the lamps on the boat. I opened the door carefully. Every step I got closer to the creature made me more determined to remove it from the ship. I opened the lid of the box Fernando and I had put it in, and there it was. The meat glimmered like chicken fillet under the bright lights in a supermarket. I stared at the creature for a moment and then turned my eyes away. It was terrible to be alone in a room with a creature as hideous and terrifying as this one was, even if it was dead. My nose filled with the smell of dead flesh and brackish seawater. It was time, but the only obstacle was the weight. Fernando wasn't here to help me carry it this time. I grabbed some gloves from a closet, and they helped me get a grip on the slippery skin. But 5 minutes, I'd gotten the fish out, and I decided I would just drag it outside. I tried to breathe through my mouth so that I didn't have to smell that disgusting scent. I dragged the body outside and tried to lift it as much as possible. so that it would not drag too much on the deck and leave a trail of sludge. In the stormy weather, moving it was a hell of a job, but eventually I got the carcass to the edge of the deck near the railing. I watched the waves crash against the bow of the ship. They seemed to want to devour the steel, as if the ship were an unlawful guest that suddenly was no longer tolerated by her host. I threw the monster on the railing with all my strength, but due to an abrupt big wave that hit the ship, the carcass fell back, and I had to hold onto the railing so as not to lose my balance. Only when the monster lay motionless on the deck again did I taste iron in my mouth. I wiped my hand along my cheek and watched as my dark red blood quickly blended in with the rain that fell on my hands. I was disgusted by the idea that a sharp fin, or perhaps even one of the teeth had cut me, made contact with my face. Once again, I lifted the beast over the railing, and this time I did not wait to push it further. I watched how it fell over the railing. It dropped into the sea with a dull splash. I saw how the creature was slowly swallowed by the darkness of the sea. I watched with a smile, my face still bleeding and now completely soaked because of the rain. But I was immediately amazed when I suddenly saw the being move. In a fleeting motion, it swam away into the depths. I rubbed my eyes and wrote it off as a hallucination, probably caused by my irrational fear or my lack of sleep. But nevertheless, I went back to the cabin, feeling scared to the bone. I washed my hands 4 times and stuck a patch over the cut on my cheek before I returned to my bed. I woke Fernando again, but I didn't care. I ignored him and just went right to sleep, happy that I could sleep for 2 hours more. I'm almost certain that it was Fernando who finally ratted me out. He must have heard or seen me when I returned. The captain, fixed on the money that he could or could not have brought in with the bycatch, was furious when he found out that the fish had disappeared. I didn't expect him to fire me after all those faithful years on the Mary, but apparently one mistake is enough to be banned. I could not come up with a valid reason why I did what I did, not without embarrassing myself at least. But, to be honest, the fact that I got fired over dumping some grotesque fish wasn't a disaster. I had saved enough money with my work on the ship, and had not given myself rest in years. So I decided it was time to enjoy a few months in a sunny country far from Florida. Maybe I had been there too long anyway, longer than was safe for me, in case there was someone left who wanted to hurt me. When my money ran out after a long vacation in South America, and I returned to Florida about 1.5 years later to find work in the harbour again, I heard what happened. 1.5 weeks after we caught the black fish, the Virgin Mary had sunk. Somewhere 30 miles from the coast, it had been eaten by the waves. A bartender who recognised me told the story while he served me a beer on the house. The cause of the sinking was attributed to negligent maintenance of the ship, and despite their distress calls, picked up by several ships in the area, nobody had found any survivors. Only the swollen bodies of 3 of the 15 crew members had been found on the shore, the bodies only identifiable by the teeth. None of the crew members had survived. I regretted the loss of my comrades in that bar on the quays that night, where we had drunk regularly with the whole team. I drank a beer for every head of the crew, except for the captain and Fernando, the traitor. He got what he deserved. I always felt I'd been his friend, but the irony of life is that, in the end, he had done me a favour with his betrayal. I was alive, and he had drowned in those dark depths, the same depths as in which that monstrous creature still hunts for its food. This story is released under an attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives, 4.0 International Creative Commons license. The story was narrated by Peter Yearsley. It was written by A Darker Tale Follow A Darker Tale on Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.